I'm Brian Hyatt. This is Rolling Stone Music Now. Really happy to be bringing you an exclusive interview with Robert Plant and Alison Krauss. They're announcing nearly 30 new dates on their tour together, and they join me for their only interview. It's a really fun conversation about their collaboration, their tour, and a whole lot more, including the moment Robert got on stage last year and sang Stairway to Heaven for the first time in many years. Here's my new interview with Robert Plant and Alison Krauss. What has been your favorite part of these shows? Obviously, you're enjoying it enough to add more.
Well, we've been growing from this sort of the nervous formality of the very initial kicking it off after so many years of being apart and not really being sure or even imagining that we would ever get back together. So if you go back to all that time ago in the beginning of Raise the Roof recordings, and the idea of taking it beyond there, it was very tentative, really, a bit nerve-wracking. And if I don't know if you think this, Alison, but when we were recording, doing some TV clips at Sound Emporium with Duane Eddy and James Burton and stuff, how were we to know from that kind of formal delivery, very neatly done, that we would end up as a particularly far-out, loose band, quite funky and quite extending all our songs? And I think that's the thing. We just grew more and more into a new place. That's what kind of gave us the impetus to try this again.
How has it felt for you, Alison?
Oh, it's felt great. We've been doing this on and off since, 2007, 2006? And it's just gotten better every time we've gotten together. And the band has more room, and I get a little more consistency with what's happening when it's time for me to jump in and sing harmony. Yeah, I'm really glad that we've been able to revisit this as many times as we have. And when I thought, oh, it'll be too long. It'll be too long in between. But it's amazing how quickly the months go by before we go out again. So I'm really looking forward to doing it again.
When you mentioned a little more consistency, I know that was always a kind of an issue because of the way that you harmonize and the way that Robert sings with a lot of freedom and improvisation was always a challenge to mesh those things. So how are those things changing to make it easier?
Oh, I don't know if they're changing. It's just, I think that I can catch a little bit more of his phrasing when he looks my way. So we have that. But yeah, and he's always very funny because he's like, don't worry about it. He goes, it's the same. It's the same every time. And I'm like, it's never the same. So, yeah, I got to hang on for dear life.
I don't notice any of that.
Of course not.
No, he doesn't notice.
I think you do such a great job. And the thing is, when you're, let's just swing this around a little bit. I feel the Viking lodestone moving around to Magnetic North. When you're doing the things that you do with so regal and isolatingly beautiful, chillingly perfect to try and hit harmonies around last kind words.
I want you to send my body simply to my mother.
Oh, it don't bother me or whatever it is. And I've got my fingers crossed, my hands behind my back. I know that Jay and Dennis, rhythm guys, are looking and they're waiting for me to not quite get it right. So I do feel it's a little bit like being in Asbury Park. It's like a fairground ride at times just to try and remember harmony positions which I was not born into because I was a rock and roll singer trying to be Dion all those years ago. I've learned a lot, and those moments are hair-raising. You don't have... Listen, Alice, you're really on it, and it's just great to be learning and be contrite and humble and come into your dressing room bowing and saying, can you just play last harmony to me again?
Yeah, but it's not quite like that, Brian.
Well, whatever it is, the thing is, it worked. And in truth, it got more and more like we were enjoying it. Everybody stepped out from the place that they began. So we, Alison and I, were able to, and I can't wait to do this again, stand side by side and enjoy where people are going instead of it just being that whole deal of it being here's the rendition. Oh, and here it is again. And, oh, there it is again. Instead of that, we've got a lot of intuitive expression within the songs, which was why we didn't want to let it go when we got to that very last show. It was quite emotional, really, saying goodbye to it.
I think that was July when you ended. What have the two of you both been up to since July?
I've been in the studio recording, and that's a tedious process. So that's what I've been doing on the time off.
Yeah, and I've got a group of friends that I play with over here a little bit from time to time. And I've also been going through all the stuff that I never released and never quite got finished and getting excited about it, going, wow, what am I going to do with that? It's the idioms, the visitations, the places that I've been musically, which were not complete, are just mind-boggling. And they're a little bit overwhelming. If it was difficult enough to get on this call, never mind trying as to what to do.
The last time we spoke 2 years ago, right after this album came out, there was a real sense that you had a bunch of extra songs and that maybe there could be a third album. What additional discussion, if any, or movement has there been along those lines?
No, nothing really. There were a couple of album releases that had an extra song somewhere. Guess what? If you put vinyl out in Japan, you have to have 13 tracks, or it's all this sort of kerfuffle. The sky's the limit in what we could do in the future. Somewhere, somehow, there's a zillion songs. I'm in my little studio now. And if you think getting on this call was difficult, you should see the equipment that I work with. I've got a Boss BR-180 digital recording studio, which only ever plays back CDs. And then I sing, and I've got a digital Tascam digital recorder, and I sing, and I put the vocals through a guitar pedal. And then I record them on that over there. And it sounds great. Why bother to go to the studio? So I'm locked in this sort of, soon I'll get the Revox out and clean the heads.
Also in your spare time, you're making sort of lo-fi home recordings of new songs or something.
Yeah, something like that. But I can't find words. Ah. I think this is a very difficult time to try and wax lyrical out there. So I'm just listening to people's stuff that they do, and you must be doing that, Alison, in the studio, because the guys that you have played with and the recordings that you're working on, they must be exquisite. I'm so lo-fi, it's frightening, but that's part of me.
The set list was pretty set, even though what you were doing with it wasn't set. I understand you might be shaking it up a little bit on this leg.
Oh, no, really? Are we really? You want to shake it up again?
Again, is that?
It's in a constant state of shakeup. So this will be interesting.
I'm keeping right out of this because I can't. I don't know. The idea, we did a great version of Black Dog. I remember when Buddy Miller and Mark Rebo were with us and we did that Crossroads.
Yes.
And we did a great Black Dog then. I don't know. Of course, we could always rewrite the words so they don't sound like 22-year-olds singing about hanging out at a drive-in movie. I'm not sure. I don't know. This is not the time to have a three-way conversation about this.
Oh, about the set list. This is more private.
Yes. I'll send roses every day. In the
Yes. I mean, that version of Black Dog is incredible. And who knew that was such a malleable song, you obviously, but to hear you harmonizing it was pretty incredible, actually.
It's good, and the grooves that we can. Yeah, have you received a rose yet in this conversation?
No, I am not. There's not yet.
Allison, what would you, if you had to add something to the set list, what would you add?
Oh, what would I add? Boy, that would take some. That would take. You know, when you grow up in bluegrass, you don't do anything but work on your harmonies all the time. You don't go to prom. You don't go to football games. You don't talk to other people. You just sit around, work on your harmonies. And so I like the ones that we can spend some real time with. Luckily, we've had a great salad of material to choose from. I love the songs that we've come up with through the years for these records. And there's a couple that we'll bring out, you know, from the past out there. And I don't have any complaints about what we end up singing. I just like to have plenty of time with them.
I love that you start out with Rich Woman, and you start out, you don't come in guns blazing. She got the money that I love her. She got
the money that I love her. Everything's got to settle down. This, nothing should be frenetic. It should set the scene for the attitude that with the occasional diagonal. It should just set a groove for the show so that everybody in the room knows that it's going to have a little bit of a feel and a lope to it that is saying something without it having to be, as you say, there's no need for it to have any huge amount of power and whatever it is. It should get people into the right place in their bodies and their receptors to just say, hey, this is a great groove. And it is. And when I listen to the live stuff and I can hear the incidental stuff that Victor and Stuart Duncan, the Krauss-Duncan relationship on electric guitar, it's really, it's great. I don't know whether it's in the bluegrass world, whether or not Stuart Duncan considered to be sexy, but.
Oh, yes, he is.
I was hoping I wasn't on thin ice.
Oh, yes.
And never mind him, your brother. Really, these guys, this is the thing about the band is, even though the set kind of remains the same, sometimes, what's going on within it all is, it's a great landscape. You Owe Me a Rose.
And then a few songs in, you go into rock and roll. And it is a rock and roll rendition of rock and roll, just perhaps not the same brand of rock and roll as the original.
No, but the original wasn't the same brand of rock and roll as it might have been. If it had been Billy Lee Riley on Sun or Hayden Thompson or somebody like that, early Bob Luman, that's how it would have been. That's the great thing about playing as a group of people is that the place to go is, it's a different position in the kind of, and a different position in the kind of historically in what rock and roll was doing. In the early stages, it was a dance piece, which while you were dancing, you may be singing the lyrics, there may be hook lines, but it was all about that great 2/4 swing time thing. And that's the thing about Gone and Can't Let Go. It's just, it's endearing, but at the same time, it gets rid of a little bit of that kind of, it becomes a joy, different kind of joy, yeah.
Hard rock thing is what you're a little sick of at this point in your life, perhaps.
Well, I'm not sick of it, no. But if Rodney Crowell or Chris Isaak or somebody was singing in that idiom,
yeah,
I would prick up my ears and go, oh, okay, this is pretty far out stuff. It's because we know the other way of doing it. And I think that's been mastered and it's had a great journey. But yeah, have you heard of a group called the Red Clay Strays? There's a track that they do called No Way to Go. It's that whole deal of swing time rock and roll, which, let's face it, if you can't get it out of those players, do you really need it to be any other way? Does it have to have a different inflection? I think it's right down where it needs to be.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Get a special kick out of doing those songs from Robert's past, Allison?
Yeah, I do. I love the way that the band takes it and makes it new again. And it's always scary to do something that everybody knows. But Robert is someone who's always changing. And if you go through his solo career, you can't believe it's the same guy that can fit in every place and still remain himself. And this is another form of it. And he's only interested in new life on things. So it stays very interesting. Is it fun? Yeah. Is it scary? Yes. It's scary to revisit those old tunes, but he wants new life on them. And we have the perfect bunch of guys to bring that. They all are as individual in what they do as right. Robert is with what he does. They are one of a kind. All of them have such personality and such empathy. When they play, I don't know a better situation that we could have ended up with than these guys.
That's where I would want to be. That's the kind of halfway house in between 72 and what the way that we're playing rock and roll now. Rock and roll is a condition rather than the title of a song. It's that idiomatic, the different ways that these songs came through and the different inflections and the ways that people responded to them were quite different. And it was the same thing, but generationally, there was, I don't know, there was something really neat about that early era of rockabilly and rock and roll, which is, it's endearing and really quite something. And we do really let it rip vocally. When we want to go, we're standing side by side, and sometimes my voice isn't quite as clear, or we've done 9 gigs in 11 days or something like that, 12 days. And I know that there's places like on Levee Breaks or something where I really want to go, and in Battle of Evermore, let's go. And Alison's got this, you got this look, you're looking at me and we're only like a yard apart, both pointing, looking at each other with the microphones there. And your expression is, you want to take it up a little bit higher? And I'm going, and my eyes are saying to you, I'm not really sure whether I can. So that's as free form as changing the set every 2 or 3 weeks. That's where the kick is for me, is that I'm singing with a character who's got so much gas in the tank, can do more or less anything.
I love that there's 3 Everly Brothers songs in the set list. It just shows how important that is to the sort of Plant Krause aesthetic and also as artists to the both of you. What is it, obviously, just when it comes to harmonies, you can hardly do much better, but what else draws you to return to that so much in the show?
Oh, those songs are, they're so beautiful. Yeah. I think, and the Everlys really, they were the standard for harmony singing, just like those brother duets of the Lubin Brothers. And then you got the Blue Sky Boys, and they put such a, gosh, they brought it out of the, brought it off the porch, the Everly Brothers, and those tunes and the,
yeah,
boy, I don't know, like they did something. They made it. Go ahead, Robert.
No, you're right. I think that they had much more of a teen attitude. But then when they did Leave My Woman Alone, that was coming from Ray Charles, I do believe. And there was a little bit more of an angle to what they were coming out with. I love the Lubin Brothers and Blue Sky Boys. But I guess because I'm a little bit what you might loosely call chronologically gifted, I can remember the effect that the Everlys had on the street corner, the kind of angst of Kathy's Clown, or the sort of Stick With Me Baby from them had, it was an incredible recording, a very early independent Warner Brothers recording when they left Cadence Records. And it's just, it drives like crazy. What a sound. And then they followed that up with Temptation. There was a confidence and a sort of move out of the way, listen to this about them, which is, it was a great step forward, I think, in those days. And it related to everybody who was in love with somebody on a Thursday and then somebody else on a Saturday.
I also think it's the thing that they're singing. That's the thing we both understood when we got together. We come from such different places, but we both understood the Lubin Brothers like the back of our hands. That was where we met, that kind of place.
Right. It's a funny thing, though, listen, because here in this little studio room, I've got, not very far from here, a whole list of our very first considerations when T-Bone, when we were, and the sort of caliber of the songs, there's some incredibly haunting pieces.
Oh, I'd love to see that list.
Yeah, I'll photograph them and send them you, because there's no way I can scan them. I don't know how to do that. But some great stuff, yeah. And it was all, I think T-Bone was looking into that, trying to marry it up between that stylistically where we were coming from as both listeners and appreciators of the game, and also what we might have in our tanks, what we may have as a combo, as a combination. And incredible. Yeah. And who would have known? I think I brought Stick With Me Baby to that first session, and I brought the original version of it. And of course, before we knew where we were, it had completely morphed into this beautiful, lovelorn, don't worry, it's all going to be fine, which is how I feel every night at about 9:05 p.m. It's all going to be okay. It's like, involve romance.
Robert, you recently found, I guess, the poster from your first gig, which is extraordinary. The Black Snake Moan, the weirdest, wildest sound in R&B. That must have been a bizarre thing to contemplate. That was 60 years ago.
Yeah. In fact, I'm looking at it now. It's with 2 books of lyrics on the top of it. And I opened the box. I found this CD yet again by a guy called Murray Hammond, quite a remarkable collection of songs. And I moved it out of the way and opened the box up and I found some letters. And I found this book, self-made, very amateur, but I was 15. And it even has a telephone number with four numbers, four digits. The weirdest, wildest fan R&B. You want proof? See them soon. And inquiries. It's fantastic. Oh, I could do that all again. That's an amazing piece of music, that Black Snake Moan.
Black snake crawling in my room. And somebody, mama, had better come in. Get this black snake soon.
Many mornings I play that as when I start my day, just to remember incredibly, remarkably talented Lemon Jefferson was and how funny his lyrics are. He's pulling together all those very questionable lyrics coming out of the back of his limousine, I suppose. But Black Snake Moan is quite a way to start the day.
Love that. Allison, in your genre, it's taken for granted, I think, that people will stay on stage until basically they can't stand up anymore, even beyond. And you're quite young still, but I'm sure that you've always taken it for granted that you're going to be doing this if you can when you're 80 or 90.
I don't know. You never know how you're going to feel, and you never know when you're going to feel different. And I know that, you know, this music, I think so many people started so young, and it was, and they toured so much, it's all they knew. So to stop is just, known more people to keep going and playing than to stop. And I know that fans of this music, people have been glad to have them so long. It's hard to say what I'm going to feel when I get older. Hard to say.
And Robert, I mean, we're seeing Elton John is purportedly retiring. There's people retiring. We're losing some people. Do you think about a retirement or you seem to love being on the road? Do you want to just push it as long as you can push it?
I think everything from when I wake up to when I go to sleep is pushing it. I'm not living in an extreme. I'm just thinking, and quite often off the top of my head, I'm not impetuous, but I enjoy the will that I possess. And my mom used to say that I had St. Vitus's Dance, which seems to be a very good album title, if not a song title, in the middle of all this chaos that we're surrounded with. So I can't see... I think the camaraderie, the things that you share up there on, and the frailties that you know you're carrying with you quietly, and all that stuff, you're actually, the exposure of yourself to yourself is something that I would hate to say goodbye to. I can't just sit back. And out there in the real world, people say to me, and I'm sure they say it to you, Allison, probably even more so with the people that you've worked with, what about the book? And I say, Are you kidding? What? This is spectacular. Why think about it twice? This is today. And what happened in Schenectady in 1969 is another story. And for me, that continuum, that must keep going. And as I prepared myself for this amazing technological feat this afternoon, I was pulling all my lyric books out and going, got to get the groove back. I've got something to say. So yeah, I'm going to keep going as long as they've got effects machines that make me sound good. Well, it worked for Elvis. Listen to that, you know, the compression on his voice on some of those big ballads in 57.
You even, Allison, I don't know if you saw this, but Robert was, for charity, he played Stairway to Heaven with a very motley crew at a charity event. It was the guitarist played the intro in a way I'd never heard before. It was a loose but passionate rendition. Was it bizarre to do that after all this time?
All that glitters is gold, and she's buying.
Allison, it was that Andy Taylor event.
Oh, you told me about that.
Yeah, he was actually saved by the bell by a particular treatment for his condition. And to celebrate it, there was a kind of move of we must keep this, create more and more finances to keep this experimentation up, because Andy Taylor had gone from not being strong enough to hold the neck of his guitar and the weight of his Telecaster to now he's got his band and he's back on the road. He had an amazing U-turn. And I was invited to go and be a part of this with some other guys. And it was cathartic. And again, it's like people saying, what about the book? People hear you singing it. They go, oh, that's good. He never was going to do that. But I didn't really do it. I just blurted it out because it's so important song to me for where I was at the time and where I was with Jimmy and with John and Paul. So on that night, it was what it was, and it was a trial by fire, but I felt better at the end than at the beginning.
I was thinking it could be the last time you ever sing that song. Would you be okay with that?
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I haven't got around to doing the ice skating rinks in Finland yet with a small orchestra. So I don't think I'll be doing that. But I don't know. Who knows? Something could change somewhere. Spirit and heart could come back in the soul. But it's a long song. Who can remember all those words?
So you have these 30 or so dates and you have your own careers. What are your hopes for the future of this collaboration?
I'm going to get really close to the microphone and say, I really hope that we can pull a cat out of the bag again.
We have had such a great time making those records and touring that I'd love to see it happen again, too. We've had a great time. I feel like we've made something new when we recorded together. The whole thing has been a surprise for me. And I know it was for Robert, too, although he seems to have more bravery in this department. But to me, when this first came up, I thought, what in the world are we going to do? And T-Bone, he says, my goal is to make both of you incredibly uncomfortable. Well, we managed to feel pretty good about it at the end. It's been a real trip.
Sure. He's so masterful and also so invisible now. It's like we know that we have this very, I do believe, something that we all touched on at various times in the recordings. And with his, that kind of compulsion that he had actually on the studio floor, driving things along, it was really crucial. Doing gigs is doing gigs, but actually making magic in the room is the only way you get to a gig. That's the way to do it. I better get those lists out. It's true, though, because it's once you've got it, you can't really blow it out of the water unless you have a personality, a real difference in personality problem stuff between us. We don't have that because we laugh at each other. But underneath it all, there's a lot of love and it's a strong affinity. It's good. Really good.
And that's our show. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, subscribe to Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you get your podcasts. And please leave us 5 stars and a nice review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, because that's always appreciated. But as always, thanks so much for listening, and we will see you next week.